This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, July 29th, 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The 15th annual KUAF Summer Jazz Series concludes with a performance by the Amina Figueroa Quintet at Walton Arts Center Star Theater on Friday, August 16th. This composer, arranger, orchestra leader, and her ensemble offer a distinctive voice while performing an all-original repertoire. Tickets and more information available online at KUAF.com. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, the challenges facing the Northwest Arkansas Women's Shelter as staff members help a record number of clients. Plus, Randy Dixon, director of the Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History, shares archived sound files of notable Arkansas political figures. Also, we have data analytics, the latest installment of Arkansongs, and more. But first, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have a new report out showing that Arkansas is below the national average for life expectancies. Menwei Chang is an epidemiologist with the CDC and says across the nation, people can expect to live 19 more years after age 65, with 14 of those years in good health.
However, the Arkansas is actually for the life expectancy is about 18.1 years, and healthy life expectancy is about 12.2 years.
The center compiled U.S. Census data breaking down averages for both life expectancy and healthy life expectancy for males, females, whites, and blacks in all 50 states. In Arkansas, healthy life expectancies, meaning the number of years one can expect to live in good health, were much higher for whites than blacks and higher for females than males. Senator Mark Pryor reports economic growth in the United States and Arkansas. He says Arkansas's auto registrations are up 14% and some local banks are showing increases in earnings.
Home bank shares reported increases of 14% over the second quarter from last year. It's the ninth straight quarter record earnings for them. That's great. And Simmons First National reported a 1.5 increase over 2012 second quarter. Again, we're seeing growth in the community bank sector, which is always a positive.
Pryor says Moody's Investor Services has bumped the U.S. credit rating back up to AAA. He says the weekly leading index, which is a measure of future economic growth, rose to its highest level in more than 2 years. Results from a new NBC News Wall Street Journal poll show 83% of Americans disapprove of Congress, which is an all-time high for the survey. U.S. Senator John Bozeman of Arkansas says people are frustrated with instability in the markets and indecision on Capitol Hill.
They see, the very weak economy affecting them. They see high gas prices, things that really do impact their pocketbook. And there's just this feeling that nothing's being done, that they're not being listened to. And it's a terrible problem. People have lost faith in their institutions.
Bozeman says more needs to be done to reduce unnecessary business regulations, protect people's savings and pensions, and create new jobs. The poll also suggests nearly 6 in 10 voters would vote to defeat and replace every single member of Congress if they had such an option on their ballot. Bill Halter has stepped out of the 2014 Arkansas governor's race. In an email sent from his campaign mailing list, Halter stated he is removing himself from consideration to avoid a divisive primary election and to help unite the Democratic Party. In addition, Halter stated his congratulations to Mike Ross in a great start to his campaign for governor. Halter also stated he will work hard to elect Ross and other Democratic nominees for office in the coming election. Completing Interstate 49 through Arkansas has long been a goal of the State Highway Transportation Department. In Arkansas, the interstate will include what is to become the Bella Vista Bypass, current portions of Interstate 540, and new sections of I-540 currently under construction. Danny Strasley of the Arkansas Highway Transportation Department says one of those sections under construction is an extension of the interstate through the Chaffee Crossing area.
It'll be a new connection from I-40 down to the Chaffee Crossing. and then from south of the Chaffee Crossing location all the way down through, you know, just the western side of the state where you've got communities like Mena, Daquin, and on down into Little River County on to where I-30 exists.
Straisley says early cost estimates for completing the stretch of I-49 from south of Fort Smith to Texarkana are around $2.2 billion, including both design and construction costs. And no overall funding has been allotted for the stretch of interstate through the Ouachita Mountains.
But, you know, as these other components are put together, I mean, it makes sense to do the work on what will become I-49 in northwest Arkansas because of the population center and the traffic volume. It makes sense to work on what will become I-49 in southwest Arkansas at Texarkana. That's a major entry port into the state through Interstate 30. The traffic volumes support it, and of course, once it's connected through to Louisiana, you'll see a lot of traffic coming up from that state as well.
Interstate 49 is eventually slated to connect New Orleans to Kansas City. As the highway is set to intersect I-40 in Crawford County, area leaders have long eyed the economic benefits that the area will reap from having a major north-south and a major east-west corridor meet in the area. Though students will soon begin returning to the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, students and year-round residents alike will soon face a road closure on Dixon Street. Access to the section of the street between Duncan and McElroy Avenues is currently limited, but starting Wednesday, the street will be closed to all traffic as crews prepare and repave the section of the street. The work is expected to last through August 4th, and the street will reopen to limited traffic, such as authorized U of A personnel and scheduled delivery and pickup service, on August 5th. The street is expected to reopen to all traffic Monday, August 12th. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals had a mixed bag of luck on the road in Springfield this weekend. The Nats lost to the Cardinals Friday night with a final score of 7-2. The Nats had a favorable turn with an 8-4 win Saturday, but the Cardinals came back yesterday and delivered the Naturals a 6-5 loss. The Naturals continue play on the road tonight against the Arkansas Travelers at Dickey Stevens Park in North Little Rock. Tonight, there's a 60% chance of showers and thunderstorms in northwest Arkansas and a 50% chance of showers in the Arkansas River Valley. Expect lows throughout the area in the lower 70s. Mostly cloudy tomorrow with a 60% chance of showers and a high of 86 in northwest Arkansas and a slight chance of showers with a high of 91 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow night, there's a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms with lows from 68 in northwest Arkansas to 72 in the Arkansas River Valley. This is Ozarks at Large. Advancements in technology allow information on store purchases or website visits to be recorded, but how is this data being analyzed? Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis has more.
Like Hansel and Gretel of the old fairy tale left breadcrumbs on the forest floor, many people these days leave a similar trail through their daily lives, except these breadcrumbs live solely in the digital world. These digital breadcrumbs come in many different forms. Forms like a transaction that you make with a credit or debit card at the gas station, grocery store, liquor store, or really anywhere. Even your internet activity, through the use of tracking cookies that provide targeted advertisements, and everyone and everything you follow on social media, are digital breadcrumbs in the forest of data analytics, a term frequently used to define the burgeoning field of big data. Eli Jones, Dean of the Walton College of Business at the University of Arkansas, says that as a study, big data has grown rapidly around the world for a simple reason.
So when you think about it from any business angle, we are constantly getting data. There's no shortage of data, right? Every time you go to a gas pump and you pay with a credit card, right, we can tell you what time you bought the gas, where you bought the gas, how much you spent. There's a lot of data out there. This happens on a daily basis repeatedly. Every time you walk into a store, you get a piece of clothing, you know, the RFID tag scans you, you know, what time you were there, how much you spent. Every time you go to a grocery store, I mean, the list continues.
Collecting the data is one thing, And what companies use these ever-growing data sets for is another.
They have mounds and mounds of data. What they want to know is, how do we use that, right? How do we analyze big databases to find out what the customers are wanting, and when are they shopping? What are they buying? What are their preferences? There's this move now where we are going toward one-to-one marketing. You know, the old mass marketing that we used to do. You put out a lot of flyers and you hope they come. Today, we can tell you who you are and what your preferences are because you're giving us all of the data.
But the retail industry isn't the only sector using data analytics to more efficiently conduct business. Gary Wicker, the Senior Vice President of Engineering and Enterprise Services at J.B. Hunt, says that there are six main areas where the company is investigating use of data analytics. While the trucking company uses databases in the traditional areas of financial and accounting services as well as risk management to find cost trends and to detect potential fraud, Wicker says that data analytics also allows the company to efficiently perform preventative maintenance.
We're going to have 10,000 tractors that we own, and we're going to have probably close to 90,000 pieces of trailing equipment. So analyzing the performance and downtime of different equipment to identify trends and help us actually be more proactive so that the truck doesn't break down on the side of the road. If we see that there's a problem with batteries, then we can go in and replace that battery, as an example, before it would cause us a problem on the road.
In addition, Wicker says that J.B. Hunt uses analytics to aid in driver recruitment, better shipping execution, and to gain insight from the company's vast customer base. Brent Combs is the Director of Enterprise Information Services at J.B. Hunt, and he predicts that moving forward, analytics will become an even greater part of the logistics business.
The most obvious need for that data is just performance metrics, ways to measure how you're performing through reports, etc. But we fully expect to continue to use that data for areas like data mining, predictive analytics, etc., going forward. Traditionally, it's been a lot of reporting, performance, KPI metrics that we use to measure our business, and we will continue to do that, but we clearly would like to move more into those other areas.
But Combs says that as the use of big data sets continues to grow, it's not just analysts who are needed.
Organizing and getting the data in a format that's useful for analytics or for reporting even, people call data modelers, data scientists. Those people are extremely hard to find. We've had quite a challenge, you know, here at Hunt trying to find those kinds of people with that kind of skill. So it goes hand in hand. You have to have the data modeler, the data scientist to help organize the data, collect the data, and put it in a format that people can use then to draw the statistical conclusions, etc. So I think those go hand in hand.
But still yet, more data analysts will be needed as the logistics, retail, and other business sectors move into new areas of data analytics, which is one reason why the Walton College of Business has begun offering a 9-month online program to certify graduate-level students in the field of data analytics. Although there are similar programs at other universities, Dean Eli Jones says that what sets this program apart is what always sets the Walton College's programs apart from that of other business schools.
We've got the right faculty with the right connections right here locally to businesses to get the right data so that our students can come in and analyze. So we're real fortunate being here in Northwest Arkansas in particular with huge companies right in our backyard. And because many of these companies are partners with us, and they believe and they trust in us, our faculty in particular, they're saying, okay, we'll share some of our data with you. There are not many business schools that can say they've got partners like Walmart and J.B. Hunt and Tyson. We do.
Dean Jones says that while the Walton College of Business has had a data analytics certification program for a while, this new online program is a move by the college to meet demands in the education market. He says that while there is still a market for in-person, face-to-face programs, there is a growing demand for both hybrid and entirely online learning programs.
What business schools are having to do today is they are having to look at these various market segments and appeal to those market segments. This online program builds off of our face-to-face program that we've had, and it then addresses this other market that says, give it to me online.
The registration period has passed for the new online data analytics certification program, which quickly met its registration quota of between 20 and 30 students. As the entire program is online, that cap could grow in the coming years, provided the necessary teaching staff is available and if demand for the skill set continues to grow, which is likely. Dean Jones says that the last time he has checked, recent graduates who have master's degrees in data analytics and get hired typically make between $90,000 and $140,000 annually. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
The jobless rate is unchanged, but it sure doesn't feel like it. Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas explains in his weekly business and political news recap.
Arkansas's unemployment rate was unchanged in June from May at 7.3%. The state jobless rate has hovered at or above 7% for 53 consecutive months. That is short of the record 111 consecutive months that it stayed in that range from April of 1980 to July of 1989. The number of employed in Arkansas during June was 1.234 million, down compared to the 1.255 million in June 2012. Home sales in Arkansas's four largest markets during the first half of 2013 were up almost 10%, with only the Fort Smith metropolitan area seeing a decline in the number and value of homes sold in the six-month stretch. That's according to the CityWire's Arkansas Home Sales Report. Economists and realtors say that climbing mortgage rates are convincing some fence-sitting home buyers to go ahead and make that housing purchase. Retailers began their back-to-school push earlier this year, but the National Retail Federation expects consumers will shell out $54 less per family this year compared to 2012. A survey conducted by Prosper Insights indicates families with school-age children will spend an average $635 on apparel, shoes, supplies, and electronics. That's down from $689 spent last year. Improving sales prices for lumber and a gain from the acquisition of a joint venture helped Deltic Timber to a big second quarter net income boost. The Eldorado-based timber and real estate firm posted second quarter profits of $11.2 million compared to $3.5 million in the previous year's quarter. USA Truck shrunk its net loss to $1.04 million in the second quarter, still in the red, but improving from its year-ago loss of $3.5 million. The Van Buren-based trucking firm, which has brought in turnaround CEO John Simone, said it posted a 7.7% increase in base revenues as its traditional trucking segment rebounded. The Arkansas Electric Cooperatives has reached a long-term agreement to purchase 150 megawatts of wind energy from RES America Developments, a subsidiary of Renewable Energy Systems Americas. The wind power will be sourced from the Origin Wind Energy Project located in Oklahoma. Arkansas Electric Cooperatives will be the sole recipient of the electricity generated. Fayetteville-based Mitchell Communications Group will open new offices in New York and Chicago as the PR firm expands with new and existing clients in those markets. Mitchell Communications merged earlier this year with Japan's Dentsu Network. The PR firm does business with Walmart, Tyson Foods, J.B. Hunt, Procter & Gamble, and other major regional firms. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business Arkansas update.
Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from four offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com. Let's talk numbers for a minute. 49. That's how many people were in the Northwest Arkansas Women's Shelter as of last week. That's 22 adults and 27 children. Earlier this month, the shelter hit a record number of 53 clients, surpassing the previous record of 43 set in December. Eva Lauren, director of outreach for the shelter, says they have been experiencing a higher number of people seeking their services for about 6 months.
We don't think that there's necessarily more domestic violence happening in our community. We think it's a combination of our community is growing, and in general population growth, you have a growth of victims needing services. But we think one of the main issues is awareness. We've been in Northwest Arkansas for, this is our 25th anniversary, but very few people for a long time knew about our existence because of safety and confidentiality concerns. We are wary of reaching out to the community. So within the past couple of years, that's changed because we want to increase awareness for people who might need our services and people who might want to support us as well. And I think what we're seeing now is a direct result of more people knowing about us. So it's not that there's more domestic violence happening, but the 49 people that are in shelter today are 49 people who are not in an abusive home right now. And what we're seeing is more people getting out of those situations and coming to us for services.
In the 2012 National Census of Domestic Violence Services, 463 domestic violence victims in Arkansas were served on September 12, 2012, the one day chosen for the survey. 84% of identified local domestic violence programs participated in the 2012 study. Conducted annually by the National Network to End Domestic Violence, the census counts adults and children who seek services from United States domestic violence shelter programs during a single 24-hour period. In addition to providing a safe haven for victims of domestic violence, the Northwest Arkansas Women's Shelter also provides support groups and legal services, which are free and available to anyone, even if they are not staying in the shelter.
Frequently, we'll have clients who have a safe place to stay, but don't fully understand all the paperwork for an order of protection or just need to come in for a support group or something along those lines, and they're welcome to do that as well. He said our numbers have been very high recently. We are accommodating to the best of our abilities, but this is new for us. Every day is kind of new, and we're doing our best right now. But if this pattern continues, then we are going to have to look at our strategic long-term planning, where we're going and how we need to grow to accommodate our community's obvious need for us as an organization.
The shelter has 17 different client rooms, and each has its own decorative theme as well as its own bathroom. Eva says privacy is important, so they try to ensure everyone gets their own room. However, if it comes down to it, she says the rooms are big enough to where they could fit two or three single people in one room or even multiple small families. Eva says one of the reasons the shelter could easily get more people than the number of rooms they have is because they are the only domestic violence shelter in the state that doesn't have a maximum capacity. She says they believe every person deserves safety and they will never put someone on a waiting list who needs that safety.
We also do not discriminate. We are the first shelter in the state of Arkansas to provide housing on site at our shelter for a male victim of domestic violence, which is something that's also in our plan to continue to do if male victims reach out to us and require shelter. We don't have max capacity. We don't discriminate. We're in the business of believing, so if someone contacts us and says that they're in a domestic violence relationship and they're in fear, they need a safe place to go, and they have nowhere else to turn, we're not going to interrogate them about that. It's going to be assumed that, you know, if they have the courage to come forward, then that's enough for us.
Director of Outreach Eva Lauren says the Northwest Arkansas Women's Shelter is an emergency safe shelter, so they provide a short-term solution to clients. She says clients are told they can stay up to 30 days, but that varies from situation to situation. Eva says about half of their clients stay for a week or less because they just need a safe place to go where they can reach out to friends and family who can offer long-term support. For clients who don't have that support system, Eva says advocates work with them on setting goals and discussing what they need to be independent, like a place to live or a job. Eva says sometimes these clients are also referred to transitional housing programs in the area to help them find a more long-term solution. She says most of the referrals to the shelter come from their 24-hour hotline.
A lot of people call with the, well, I don't know if this is domestic violence, but, and continue to describe, you know, abusive tactics and isolation.
So a lot of what we do is talking to people, education, and
always leaving it up to them, though. You know, we never make anyone come in. We don't make anyone do anything while they're here. It's all about empowerment. So if they choose to come in, we'll always accept them. If they choose to stay in the relationship, we do safety planning on how to maximize your safety while staying in that relationship.
Clients at the shelter are given food and toiletries to use during their stay, though resources have been dwindling with the recent increase in occupancy. Eva says they do have a budget for buying things like groceries, but they try to get as much as they can donated so they can use money for other important things, like helping a client afford a rental deposit. The shelter has pajamas and underwear available on site, and clients can use vouchers to get other clothing at the shelter's thrift shop. Different activities are available to clients as well as their children, such as support groups, yoga classes, and art classes.
The classes have a particular focus. With the adults, it's usually about building self-confidence, empowerment, you know, learning the red flags of abuse and kind of trying to break that cycle. And for the children, because we know a lot of times children who grow up in domestic violence households are more likely to become abusers or victims of domestic violence as adults, we work specifically in our children's programming through art classes and other projects to help them understand their emotions and their feelings about everything, and to the best of their abilities comprehend what's going on and try to help break that cycle so that they don't end up repeating those same patterns again.
To find a list of items the Northwest Arkansas Women's Shelter needs, or if you'd like to make a monetary contribution, you can visit nwaws.org. To contact the shelter about a domestic violence situation, you can call their 24-hour crisis hotline at 479-246-9999 or 800-775-9011. This is Ozarks at Large.
And that's when we realized we had overlooked one small but very important detail. We forgot to ask Sandra which bedroom window was hers.
I've been sheltered all my life by the humane practice of courtship and romantic etiquette. I was unprepared for how the rest of the animal world likes to go about love.
Flicks his wrist, sending the eggs up into the air into two perfectly laid out slow motion backflips. But something goes terribly wrong.
Tales from the South, Saturday afternoon at 3:30 on KUAF.
It is Monday, July 29th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now is Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
You know what happens next?
Yes, I do.
August, school, winter.
All the things.
Wow.
Yeah.
But the kids have a while longer, and so we have kid things to
okay.
do.
Okay.
Story Hour on Tuesday at the Fort Smith Museum of History at 2 o'clock. You get a story, you get to see an exhibit that goes with it for children 12 and younger, and it's my favorite word.
Free?
Also free. Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, the community concert band performs at Blowing Springs Park in Bella Vista. If you get there early, the Rotary Club will provide a picnic supper starting at 5:30 for a minimal charge.
How fun.
And Blowing Springs Park is beautiful. 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock on Wednesday at the Rogers Public Library, Shaky Bugs.
Excellent.
With Jules Taylor.
Jules Taylor.
So much fun. And at 2 o'clock on Wednesday at the Fayetteville Public Library, Trout Fishing in America.
I know where you'll be.
Oh, yeah. And at 5:30 Thursday, they'll be at First Thursday in Fayetteville. You might get to hear parts of their new CD, which will be out in September, Rubber Baby Buggy Bumpers.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansas Songs. Bobby Lee Trammell, Northeast Arkansas, became accomplished on two ends of the spectrum. Rockabilly outcast, and as a member of the Arkansas House of Representatives, squarely a member of the establishment. He was born in Craighead County to musical parents. His father, Wiley, played the fiddle professionally, and his mother, May, played organ in the Baptist church the family attended. In fact, May's strict adherence to the church meant she never embraced Bobby Lee's forays into rock and pop music. Brash young Bobby Lee Trammell had the good fortune to be born in East Arkansas. It's most famously the cradle of Delta blues, but also home to an inordinate number of the early rock and rollers. The area also had a proliferation of nightclubs along its highways, many of them frequented by local farmhands during agriculture's more labor-reliant era. More recently, a group in Northeast Arkansas has attempted to memorialize Highway 67 as the Rockabilly Highway. Acts like Elvis Presley and Johnny Cash were regulars of the circuit, which could also include armories and schools. As a young teen, Trammell attended a show with Cash and Carl Perkins at Nettleton High School. Trammell talked his way on stage with Perkins, who allowed him to do a song with Perkins' band. The night changed Trammell's life.
Should I make a man?
Carl Perkins encouraged the teenage Bobby Lee Trammell to audition for Sam Phillips at Sun Records in Memphis. That he did, with the demo made at a Jonesboro radio station. But the story goes that Phillips told Trammell to come back in a few weeks. Trammell responded by instead relocating to the West Coast. He got a job at a Ford auto assembly plant and looked for a musical break in California. Years later, Trammell conceded not returning to Sun Records was probably a mistake. However, Bobby Lee Trammell's career did gain some traction in California, but was helped through Arkansas connections. Trammell met country music great Lefty Frizzell of Smackover. Frizzell invited him to audition for a residency at a large ballroom-type club. Trammell got the gig, and soon he was drawing crowds, which in turn drew interest from would-be agents and record labels in the immediate post-Elvis Presley era. Enter White County native Faber Robeson. Faber Robeson was born in Beebe in 1911. By the time he met Bobby Lee Trammell, Robeson had a hand in establishing Jim Reeves and Johnny Horton, as well as such Arkansas-connected acts as Floyd Kramer and the Browns. But it usually ended badly. The day after he met Robeson, Trammell had auditioned for and signed with Faber Records. A month later, Trammell had a record out, Shirley Lee, heard here with James Burton on guitar. Soon, Trammell was on tour. Bobby Lee Trammell's musical future, not to mention his future in Arkansas politics, lay ahead of him. Here in its entirety, from 1958, is Uh-Oh, on Faber Records, produced by BB native Faber Robeson, by Bobby Lee Trammell of Jonesboro.
Way you
Craighead County native Bobby Lee Trammell with Uh-Oh on Faber Records, produced by Faber Robeson of White County. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. For more information, visit arkansongs.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. The Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History at the University of Arkansas is cataloging the state's past. Their collection of archives grew when KATV Television in Little Rock donated more than 26,000 videotapes of news and sports coverage. Randy Dixon, the director of the Pryor Center, combs through those tapes every month to give us a glimpse into Arkansas's history. This month, he talked to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums about the many giant political figures to come out of Arkansas, including the first Republican to become governor of the state since Reconstruction, Winthrop Rockefeller.
The Rockefeller name brought so much weight, and, you know, plus and minus.
Right.
You know, he came to Arkansas in the early 50s and started Winrock Enterprises, Winrock Farms, on Pettigene, and it was Faubus who named him the chairman of the AIDC in mid-50s,
mm-hmm.
and then Rockefeller ran against him in 64 and lost.
Right.
And then Faubus decided not to run. But this is a little clip from 69 in his second inauguration, and he's making a lot of reference to the Rockefeller name.
I am sometimes angered to read or to hear it said that Rockefeller may get what he wants. Or Rockefeller may get 50% of what he wants. What I'm proposing is not frivolous. It is not a question of what one man wants. I am your governor. Leadership is what you want.
His was an interesting four years as governor.
Yes.
As he went out, he commuted all death sentences in Arkansas.
That's right.
You know, on his last day.
Another big name, Mills, Wilbur Mills.
Yes.
He had such, varied career. He was the most powerful man in Congress.
He was chair
for
of
a
Ways
long
and
time.
Means.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he was known as the most powerful man in Washington. He was in the House for 38 years. And he was chairman of the Ways and Means Committee from 58 to 74, and he resigned from that position because of the Fannie Fox scandal.
In the Tidal Basin, yeah.
Exactly. But this clip is with Mills, and because he did control the money, there was the McClellan Kerr Lock and Dam mm-hmm. project, which cost an incredible amount of money. This reporter was talking to Mills about the project and why it was important to spend the money for it.
As chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee and sort of in charge of our purse strings, how do you justify this $1.2 billion expenditure?
This type of a program cannot be done by a private enterprise. It must be done by government. And the only way government can do it, of course, is to use the tax revenues that are taken from individuals to carry it out. Now, we don't do these kind of projects until we are assured by what I think is the greatest body of engineers we have anywhere in the world, the Corps of Engineers, that in return for a given amount of cost, we receive back not only that in benefit, but additional dollars in benefit.
You know, the next guy that we're looking at, Fulbright.
Right.
You know, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, longer than anyone else in history. He just an amazing man. You know, started the Fulbright program, which were educational
continues
grants.
Today.
Continues today. One of the things that he was most outspoken about was the Vietnam War.
It's such a drain on the country that it leaves little left. I would hope he would make some greater progress towards settling the war. He still talks very well. I mean, he hasn't reversed himself in this regard. Says he wishes to. I would hope that he would do something or move. It would give us some feeling that there is a movement towards settling of the war, and then we could move on to doing a lot of other things which he says he's for and I'm for. No, I don't complain too much other than the delay in it. We're losing between 200 and 300 young men a week dead, 1,000 or 2,000 wounded, spending all our money, and for what? What's the purpose of it? It seems to be an intolerable situation. Nobody expects him to escalate the war. So there, you have a feeling that this is going on just for utterly no purpose.
Now there, I think he's talking about President Nixon.
Yes,
right?
He
that
is.
Was May 1969.
Yeah, but that,
earlier
that was
he had,
Nixon.
Yeah, he had clashed with President Johnson over
right.
Vietnam as well. Talk about someone who served in Washington a long time.
From this neck of the woods.
Yes, John Paul Hammerschmidt.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He was he served 13 terms from 67 to 93. And he was the first Republican elected to the House since Reconstruction. This clip is him just talking just sort of in general about how he would get along and how our delegation, no matter what the party, could get along.
I want to assure you that the Arkansas delegation works closely together. We often see eye to eye on issues, more often than not, as a matter of fact. I enjoy daily visits with Wilbur Mills and Took Gathings and David Pryor. They're men for whom I have great respect and genuine affection. And I think that it opens up communications to the other side of the aisle to erase negativism that Arkansas has never really had this opportunity to do before. I think it's a definite advantage.
Okay, we're coming to a part where, because we have just mentioned Mills, McClellan, Fulbright. Those guys were in Washington for generations.
Right.
And then it started to change.
Right. The new guard was coming
right.
in. Enter Dale Bumpers. He had served two terms as governor, was now challenging Fulbright in the primary. And it got so much national attention that ABC News decided to do a debate that aired, aired nationwide.
Wow.
It did get a little, well, let's
okay.
listen to the clip,
okay.
and then I'll throw something.
So this is
that.
The incumbent Senator Fulbright and the challenger, Arkansas Governor Dale Bumpers.
Yes.
Governor Bumpers, Senator Fulbright, we're delighted to have you with us today. I understand this is your first joint television appearance, and probably it will be your last before the campaign ends on Tuesday. Because our time is limited, we thought we would begin by asking each of you to take just a moment or so, let's say a minute, to state your case to the people of Arkansas and the country. We've already had the toss of the coin, and Governor Bumpers, you won, so you start.
Frank, thank you. First of all, I'd like to say that I have felt, and one of the reasons I decided to make this race, that the Congress has become, I think, increasingly insensitive to domestic issues. I think that there has to be a building of a very strong state-federal relationship.
Thank you, Governor. Senator Fulbright?
Well, I very much appreciate your getting us together. I had attempted to have a longer discussion with the governor, but he didn't wish to do that. I, of course, feel that the governor, I noticed, says seniority didn't serve the country well. I'm not running for national office. I'm running for senator from Arkansas.
Got a little cold in there for a moment, didn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it sure did. Yeah, they were not friendly. Now, another powerful Arkansan in Washington, Senate Chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee, John McClellan. He was in the Senate from 43 to 77, longest serving senator in Arkansas history. He chose to retire, as several have, and this is a portion of his retirement announcement, and it's I think it's one of the best in this collection. And this was in November of 77.
We are told on divine authority that to everything there is a season and a time for every purpose under the heaven. Translated into politics, this all-inclusive pronouncement can only mean that there is a time to aspire a time to achieve, and a time to retire.
I always think of McClellan and Fulbright kind of as a combo. Mm-hmm. And when I think of Senator Dale Bumpers, I think of
my boss.
Well, that's right. That's right. Pryor. The Pryor Center. That's right.
That's right.
Yeah.
Sure. He, you know, he was first elected to 4th District Congress in 1966, served, four terms there, and then was governor 75 to 79, and then came into the Senate in 79 after that and served until he decided to retire in 97. But this clip is from the Democratic primary when he was running against Ray Thornton and Jim Guy Tucker.
Wow.
In 78, so this was his first bid for the Senate. And he was driving around in a van around South Arkansas. And Steve Barnes from Channel 7 spent the day with him. And this is an interview they did in the van while they're driving in between campaign stops.
Oh, boy.
Would you like to tell this state trooper to pull this van over into a side street and let you sleep for about 4 hours?
Well, sometimes I'd kind of like to do that. But then when I think about it, I really enjoy this. This is a lot of fun to me. It's an exhilarating sort of an experience. And always after a campaign is over, Steve, after you work up your metabolism, I guess you would say, and your adrenaline pumps for weeks and weeks, and all of a sudden when an election is over, whether you won or lost, there's always a big letdown because you build yourself up to such a peak, and you're going, you're getting up early, and you're working late, and you're, I don't know, it's an excitement about it. But there are times when, very honestly, I'd like to say, stop this van and let's take off our shoes and get that lucky 13 out of that box and let's put it on the end of that rod and flip it a few times, because I'd love to stop and go fishing every now and then, especially when I pass a beautiful body of water, or when I see a canoe on top of a car, or when I see a bass fisherman about to unload a bass boat. It sure makes me want to be able to stop, but I know I've got several weeks and a lot of days before I'll be able to do that again.
Just love his voice, yes.
Oh. He's a great storyteller too.
Comes, you know, newspapers in his background as well.
Sure, down in Camden.
Yeah. Dale Bumpers, David Pryor, the third person you think of from that generation, though they were a little staggered, is Bill Clinton.
And he learned from everyone that we have listened to so far. He was a student of them, at least by watching, living in Arkansas. He was beaten once in 74.
As we mentioned.
Yes, by John Paul Hammerschmidt. He only lost one other race, and that was in 1980 to Frank White.
When Mr. Clinton was seeking his second term as governor.
That's right. Frank White hammered him on Cubans and car tags.
Car tags.
You know, the Cuban refugees were in Fort Chaffee.
And had rioted.
Right. Clinton had promised not to raise taxes on car tags, and he did.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what pretty much lost him the election. So this is his concession speech. If you'll remember that night, election night, ABC News, before the polls closed, went on the air and projected Clinton as the winner.
Oh.
I was actually assigned to be at White's headquarters that night. I think my boss sent me there. I was young.
You were not supposed to be at the winner's place.
Exactly. I was the rookie, and he wanted me. I was just going to go to the loser's headquarters. But it turned out to be a huge, huge night for the White campaign. It went so late that Clinton did not even concede that night. He waited until the next day. And the next morning, he and Hillary and baby Chelsea came out into the garden at the governor's mansion and made the concession speech.
I want you to know today that I consider myself to be among the most fortunate people in this country. I grew up in an ordinary working family in this state, was able to go through the public schools and become attorney general and governor and serve people in the way that I had always wanted to since I was a boy. I regret that I will not have two more years to serve as governor, because I have loved it I have probably loved it as much as any person who ever had this office.
He was defeated by Frank White. Frank was a banking fellow, was head of the AIDC under Pryor. So he brought a lot of finance, money, to the table as far as his campaign. And that helped him get elected. But what we have here is after he took office, this is his inaugural speech in January of 81.
I take this position today, awed by its power and responsibility. My election endorsed a new type of leadership for Arkansas. The challenge of the 80s is very clear. The era of unchecked government fiscal expansion is over. Government is not, never was, and cannot be all things to all people. Working with the Legislative Council this past month, we submit to you an austere, no-frills, no-nonsense budget. We cannot outspend inflation in Arkansas.
So what about next time?
Next time, let's lighten it up a little bit and do some entertainment.
Okay.
Music, actors, entertainment, that's just kind of some fun stuff. And I think that might work. We've got the Roots Festival coming up.
In August, right.
You know, we have a lot of Arkansas musicians. I did find a great performance of Jimmy Driftwood.
Speaking of Roots.
Right.
Yeah.
At the 1968 Mountain View Ozark Folk Festival, performing his Grammy-winning song, The Battle of New Orleans, that we can do a little bit with Jimmy Driftwood and talk about him and his influence on music and the state, if you want to, in the next show.
Okay. But, can we hear a little bit of the performance?
Sure.
Randy Dixon is the director of the Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History at the University of Arkansas. He talked to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums earlier this month. There is more from their conversation, including clips of visits to Arkansas by Presidents Truman, Kennedy, Reagan, and Carter, in an audio extra at ozarksatlarge.com.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, a writer ignites a firestorm saying electric cars are far worse for the environment than traditional gas vehicles.
Electric cars may be very exciting, but there's no reason to believe that they're clean. And in fact, according to the National Academies, they're likely one of the most harmful modes of transportation available.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Here and Now, coming up next here on KUAF. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. Support for KUAF comes from the University of Arkansas Bookstore, reminding everyone that August 3rd and 4th is Arkansas's tax-free weekend. The University of Arkansas Bookstore offers a selection of school supplies, textbooks, apparel, and more. Razorback apparel is also available at the Northwest Arkansas Mall and Pinnacle Hills Promenade in Rogers. uofastore.com for more information. The KUAF website giveaway is offering event passes to the Fayetteville Roots Festival August 22nd through the 25th. One winner will receive 2 4-day passes, which includes the Friends of the Festival backstage concert, late night passes, plus the Roots Festival main stage. The drawing will be Friday, August 16th during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Registration and more information available at KUAF.com. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Waldron. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Thanks so much for listening. Have a pleasant Monday.